tune in as we are demystifying the power of yes and as a mindset tool, infusing improv insights into life personally and professionally with one of Boise's most known comedians, but also improv coach, award-winning, as a matter of fact. And we might also bring down topics such as business, creativity, personal growth, collaboration over competition, and an obsession for all these improv skills turned into life methodology that my guest will bring to the table today.
Welcome to Events Demystified Podcast, where we explore and demystify the world of in-person, virtual, hybrid event AV production and technology by sharing insightful tips, tricks, and tactics to make your events a success. This podcast is brought to you by Tree Fan Events, a woman-owned boutique event production agency. And your host is Anka Trifan, a technical event planner and producer with almost two decades of hands-on technical experience in event production.
Welcome to another episode of Events Demystified Podcast with your host, Anka. This podcast is sponsored by Tree Fan Events, a woman-owned boutique event production agency. Without further ado, I would love to introduce our guest because you're in for a treat as I welcome Boise's kookiest comedian, Megan McCaleb, an award-winning author and an engaging improv coach, the founder and facilitator of the improvteamculture.com. She teaches the power of yes and as a mindset tool, an interactive, actionable resource to move through life's challenges with more positivity and productivity. She is passionate about creating happier, healthier human connections through humor. And I am certainly down for some humor and fun. She has been the recipient of such honors as Idaho Business Review's Accomplished 40 Under 40 and Women of the Year. Megan McCaleb is an upbeat and empowering, although sometimes tired, single mom of four, a Jeep enthusiast, and a host of I Hardly Know Her podcast. And without further ado, let's introduce Megan to the show. Welcome. It's such a great honor to have you to today's episode and a pleasure to just have this conversation with you. I have not had a award-winning comedian on the show before. So, I mean, I'm not setting the bar too high, but I'm in for a treat. I don't know about the audience, but I know they're going to enjoy it as well. So as a fellow podcaster, though, I had to snoop around a little bit and listen to some of your episodes. And here's the best question that I could come up with to kick us off. What's your best I Hardly Know Her joke?
Oh, well, that's funny because, of course, it originally came from like the liquor store, right? Liquor.
Was it?
I Hardly Know Her. That's when I first heard it. Because we're pretty much any word, but there's so many of them. Anytime there's an ER word, and my kids are always rolling their eyes at me because I like really stretch it anymore. But yeah, originally when I first heard that, it was from its original, probably one of the original origins is just a liquor store. And it's like, liquor? I hardly know her. Like, oh, dear. Funny.
Where I heard it first, actually, it wasn't that. Maybe because obviously I don't have the same cultural connotations having grown in a different country. But it was, I think, on The Office. One of the episodes where Michael kept like bringing it up during what was supposed to be safety training.
Oh, yeah. Well, wasn't he misusing it at the time?
Totally. 100%.
I'm pretty sure in that episode, he didn't even one time use it the right way.
That was for me a learning experience. I'm like, oh, one, I heard it for the first time. And secondly, this is how you do not use it because that's not the context.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it should be like where the word sounds like. Of course, now my mind is blank and suddenly I can't think of a single ER word, but it's because ER is where it replaces the her.
I actually had to go to Slanglang and Urban Dictionary and find some jokes myself because I was the same way. I'm like, I did not grow up with this stuff, right? And then I ended up going down the rabbit hole of Urban Dictionary, Googling things that maybe I shouldn't and I should have no knowledge of. And it was just like, oh my God. gosh, like, just get off, like, close the tab.
Funny that that's the name of my podcast. On a business podcast talking about I hardly know her jokes are kind of inappropriate, but because I don't know, for me, it was a couple of different things because I'm very easily amused. I think that it's funny to either do the that's what she said or I hardly know her, those types of comments after different things are said, just because I'm always listening to the way people word things. But then when I was like, well, I'm going to become a podcaster and started it several years ago, of course, like, it's very common now that people like call themselves influencers. And so I was like, influencer, I hardly know her. It's like any nobody can be an influencer suddenly. And then podcaster, I hardly know her. But that one doesn't really technically work. But I was like, you know, it fits my style. Plus, I kind of feel like I'm not really, who am I? Like, I'm a no name. I don't have like a massive following. Like in my local community, people know me a lot from local events. And I do like TV commercials and whatever. So like my kids think I'm famous when someone recognizes me at the grocery store. But for the most part, I was like, well, I still want to have a voice. I still want to share these things, this like place for verbal processing of whatever I think is at least important for me, and just put it out there. And so I was like, you know what, even though nobody knows who I am, it doesn't really matter. I still wanted to feel like I was being productive with my time and creative and utilizing the fun tool of podcasting. So I just thought it was a kind of a kooky, clever fit for just my general goofy style. And was like, my tagline is, you don't have to be a big deal to do big things. And I think that that's just a good reminder for myself that even though I'm not like globally famous yet, the efforts that I put in, I just feel more inclined to do so if I think there's some kind of value there. So,
well, I love that you answered the following question that I had to that, to the joke, because that was sort of like wondering, you know, how did you come up with the name? So thank you for that. So now that I got that out of my system, let's actually start with actual topical conversation and with a first serious question, which is, who is Megan McCaleb professionally? And is there like a clear line for you as an improv coach and award-winning comedian between your professional self and your personal self? Or is that just not possible for comedians?
Oh man, I love the timing of this question because it's been a long journey to find the balance and like merge what I felt was appropriate, because I also come from a pretty long corporate background. I had corporate jobs for 15 years in one form or another while I was also learning comedy and improv and stand-up all as like my hobby, even though I saw the value in the professional realm. Like, I'm only very recently discovering that my best way to serve the world in the business community is to be who I truly am at heart. And that is kooky, yet I'm like very tender. I cry a lot. People used to give me a hard time about, well, they still sort of do, that I cry a lot when I keynote and when I do different things. I've cried even during comedy shows before because I like to be vulnerable. And even when I'm happy, I'm a crier. So I just am like, finally, just in these past couple years, as recent as this is, and like the best way I can serve in the professional realm is to be myself unfiltered, without being, I have to be this in a professional setting, and then I can be this way in a comedy scene, because then it would be really conflicting, or, you know, people get offended at comedy. And so if you say the wrong thing, then they'll be like, oh, I expected more from professional. I'm like, well, that just means I filtered something, but it doesn't make whatever I said unprofessional, you know? So I think I'm stepping into this season finally of like just being me, and then the clients, my corporate clients, know what they're getting, and they love the whimsy and kookiness that comes along with it, and they're not afraid of it, and they know that it's going to be a true deliverable without being stodgy. And ugh, I don't ever want to put on a pair of heels again if I can ever avoid it. But yeah, I love that question, because it's hard for people to do that crossover, and it certainly was a long journey for me.
Yeah, well, you know, there is something to be said about being close friends with a comedian, which can be quite scary, because you never know when you're going to be the object of a brand new joke for the world to laugh at, you know.
That's true.
So
it
where
kind of true.
It is kind of true, right?
Yeah.
I bet your kids already know, okay, mom is going to use this, which was not very fun in the kitchen, but it's going to get to be so funny on stage.
Yeah, that's the thing. My kids, actually, that's a great example too, of just like, because I really include them in my processes, so they understand that it is actually because of the hard things that we need the laughter. And that's why humans connect in comedy shows. And a lot of times, like when people interview me on podcasts and stuff, like they expect that it's going to be really funny because I'm a comedian. But I'm like, I'm not always funny, because I'm so deep in the thoughts about the drama and the pain of humanity that I'm like,
and that's why living, I love, you know, every day life, yeah. Right?
And that, yeah, that's why I'm so passionate about finding a way to be creative with it and never to be, there's the balance between self-deprecation and owning your own experiences and never, good comedians are never going to what we call punch down and make fun of people who are different from us. Like, we have to be very careful. Some people are not always like that because then it makes comedy very divisive. But yeah, like I've recently used some stuff that I finally have had some time to heal and process from to make jokes about, and still not at the expense specifically of the people who have hurt my feelings or the experiences that hurt my, if you know, it's still my true experience, but I'm not like, and then this happened and then that happened. I try to have an energy of like, how do we learn and grow from this without hurting someone who hurt me?
It's true. So I love that you actually segue into, you know, creativity and inspiration. So how do you draw your inspiration from, especially when preparing for corporate event performances? And do you ever like run out of like fresh ideas?
Oh man, no. I have so many ideas that I've not even hardly been able to do them all. And I love, like, best case scenario for me with a corporate gig, now that I've like stopped restricting myself, is I will tell my clients that I understand the parameters of corporate and stuff. So I'm not just constantly like cussing or anything. I don't really cuss a ton anyway in my own comedy usually, but that it is very raw. Like, I let them know, if you hire me, I might make some people in your audience feel uncomfortable, and like just kind of to prepare that. But if it's a certain industry or whatever, like I love to look at like different things that are trending, or like a lot of times clients have like a theme for their conference or whatever is going on. So I just collect as much of that data as I can, so I can throw in something that is truly unique to their space. And that's where some of the improv stuff kind of plays into it as well. But it just makes it a more inclusive experience, because people are like, oh, that was about us, or that's about this industry or whatever. And then it really starts to pull people in. So
I love that.
I think that's fun. There's no end to material.
Yeah, you're like in front of like a group of accountants and you're going to start talking about like how to fix your car jokes, and everybody's like, what are you talking about?
Right. Well, and that's the big thing too, is if someone calls me and they're like, we want to do stand up for our event, I will educate them, because there's a big difference too in hiring me to straight up do my stand up act, which as a 40 something single white female,
40 something, you just turned 40 like a month ago. So
I'm 41.
Stop yourself.
I'm 41.
Okay. Don't tell anybody. Who needs to hear this stuff?
I'm just saying, my demographic is what my jokes are. So it's a lot more beneficial for a company to know that like comedy is subjective. So if they have like an audience that may not necessarily relate to me, they might not all like my stand-up. Just like if it was like a woman's retreat, they probably wouldn't hire a dude who's just going to tell genital jokes that
You'd
don't
be
relate
surprised.
To their genitals. Well, how often does it go? How often does it go well?
Yeah, it's Anka? Like, that was not a good idea. Whoever did this, they're fired. Yep.
So you get to see that. And that's what I love the idea of us doing a podcast together, is because you get to see where people make the mistakes. And I would rather say, you know what? Stand-up might not be the best fit. A keynote would be great, because I can also weave in my stand-up and my improv into any keynote. Or I teach them about, like, if we were to do an improv scenario, then it's all driven by the suggestions we get from your audience. And so it is stuff that they get to have a hand in. Otherwise, you know, when I do stand up now, I'm not walking into an audience where they don't know there's going to be a comedian, which is a huge no-no. They kind of know what to expect. They've done enough legwork where they can line up whether or not they think it's the right dynamic. And I help coach them through that. Mostly, honestly, for my benefit, because I have walked into rooms where I'm like, they don't freaking know what they're doing. And they didn't pay me enough and they didn't pay attention to what they're doing, you know? And that just makes me feel bad about myself, which then makes it not a good experience for anyone. So
absolutely. Well, piggybacking on the first question that I had, how do you keep track of all the new ideas that come to you? Like, what's your system? Like, keeping it all, you know?
You'd probably be horrified to see my system. There's about 3 different notebooks / notepads. They're all over my house. I have color-coordinated pens, sticky notes, in every room of my house. So as soon as something, I love to write it. I also keep some stuff on my phone, or like if there's a character, or like if I can think of a certain parody song or a voice, then I'll do a voice memo so I can say it to myself later. But I'm constantly writing down keywords or where I was when I saw that thing, and I just quick as I can. And then I'll, you know, every now and then I pull together all my scraps of paper from around the house, and then I do organize them, because then the actual joke writing is quite comprehensive. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever lose like a piece of paper that you had such an amazing idea and you just left it behind at the restaurant because you happened to have been there and you're like, man, I used the napkin and then I threw it away.
Oh man, no, I've no, especially if it's on something that's rogue, like, oh, I guard that. It'll go right in my wallet. It'll go in my bra. It'll go somewhere that it goes home with me. I can't think of a time I've ever misplaced one unless I did not write it down. Sometimes I'm like, oh, that joke is such a good idea. There's no way I'll forget it. And then 4 seconds later, it's like gone.
So now you no longer trust your memory. Like, you know, we used to do in our 20s, because I'm the same way. Like if I don't, I usually text myself, like literally I send text to myself, you should not see the lengthy test that I put myself with ideas and content and just thoughts, processes or whatever. Yeah. And if you don't do that, and the same way, like you just said, I would miss it. And then I'm thinking, oh, I'll remember this because this is really, really good. Like,
yeah,
distract me with something else. 5 minutes later, ask me and I'd be like, oh God, I don't remember.
I know. It's the exact same scenario when we like go, oh, I need to run into the other room to grab whatever. And you walk in the room and you forgot. It's the exact same thing. And I'm curious, can I ask you, I know you're kind of interviewing me.
No. Go ahead. Yeah.
I am.
This is going to be one of a kind. Okay. Episodes, guys. Good. We're just going to go just back and forth and it's going to be so much fun. I love it.
I love it because I'm curious from your side of things, like we were just touching on a moment ago from the event planner side.
Yeah.
I have heard some horror stories from event planner friends of mine. And like you just said, who have either not known how to hire the right thing, or maybe they didn't budget things right. Like they just kind of hodgepodge things. And then you're feeling it as the event orchestrator, right? You're back there and you can probably feel it if the audience is disconnecting from a terrible speaker or a not good comedian fit or whatever. What is that like from your perspective? And like, I'm curious how that feels for you. And if you ever have like an opportunity to help be a buffer for your client or like best practices, like what's that for you?
I would put myself in the shoes of the behind the scenes producers, coordinators, tech team at the Oscars. When, you know, Will goes on stage completely unscripted and Chris is like, I think he's going to tell me something, and then smack. So that's how you feel. You feel like from the get-go, you already get a sense. And I'm sure, you know, whoever was in charge starts feeling the same way. It's like, I did not do one. I think the biggest thing is when people don't do research. You'd be surprised how many people don't do research. It's not hard, people. Like Google someone. It's not a hard thing. You can find so many things about people now because everybody's got a social media presence, something there. Even if they have no presence, I promise you, through a third party, you can still find things about whomever you're interested to figure out. But that means you need to be a little bit of the detective, like do your job right and do a little bit of research. And then you can stand behind the choices that you've made. And if it was a good one, obviously you're going to be proud of yourself. But if it's a bad one, I'm sure you're going to find out in the research process if it was the right choice or not. And then a crisis avoided. But I think that's one of the biggest thing that I see where people, they just either assume that just because you're a comedian, you only do this type of comedy that they might have been potentially seen or witnessed one time. And that could be like a double-edged sword, right? Like if you only had a really bad experience in a comedy club where you're like, oh God, never again, then you assume that everyone else that does that as an art, as a creativity outlet, they only produce that type of content. And that can be a very bad thing because that's not like a glove that fits all. And then the side to that is where you had a really good experience, but then you hire a really bad actor, like someone that just that's not going to carry on whatever you had in your mind that is going to happen. So I go back to research and recommendations. Like, yes, with all the information and the content that's out there, I think it's still golden to have a word of mouth recommendation from someone that you trust. Would you take that from everyone out there? No, like so funny that we're in an age where now we go and self-diagnose on the internet, right? And then we end up with like going to crisis mode that this one pimple that I have on my face, now it's like, oh my gosh, I'm dying just after 3 minutes of self-diagnosing. So that happens a lot in events as well, where you hear about something or someone and you just take it at face value, don't do your research, and then you end up in a situation where like, oh, this is gonna backfire really, really bad. And
have you ever had to like cut someone off, like someone that's derailing so bad? Have you ever like cut someone's mic off and get them off the stage, or has it ever gotten that bad?
I think, again, because I don't necessarily make those call as the button pusher, right? The moment when I see that things start feeling like a little edgy and things start being weird, that's when you keep close eye contact with the client. And if the client starts making signs like this, that's when you run, you know, into action and do whatever it is necessary to, if it's a virtual, obviously go to a slide or a content, something, or if it's in person, right. That can be embarrassing in person to go and have to like fight over the microphone with someone on stage. That's
word.
Our problem. Having some skills of like being a funny person in general and a comedian, where you're turning this into a funny situation as opposed to something mm-hmm. that's super embarrassing, that might be helpful, you know, once in a while. So yeah. Great question though. Before we move any further, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our main sponsor, Trifan Events, which is a boutique event planning and production agency that will come alongside you, offering personalized event planning and technical support, strategic event design, production and technology management, and flawless execution for live, virtual, and hybrid events. The team at Trifan Events is passionate about planning and producing event experiences that get people involved with true moments of interaction, engagement, and co-creation, while offering white glove treatment throughout the entire planning process, enabling you to reach your event goals with the use of creativity, production tools, and event technology. Find out how Trifan Events can plan and produce your event become memorable. Go to trifanevents.com. So let me ask you something that popped in my mind as we were talking about this. What has been the greatest challenge that you have overcome professionally, or maybe you're currently dealing with, and how did improv help you through that?
Sadly, there's a lot of things. I think I have to learn the same lesson more often than not, more than once, before I like really learn it. But one of the biggest things I love about tools of improv is that yes and requires me to be in a state of acceptance and acknowledgement, like constantly in a ready position. So I notice right away when something is maybe not ideal, and then I get to decide what to do with that as quick as possible. So actually just two nights ago, I had a dream where I was reflecting on all these different events that I've been at over the years. I was going down this long corridor and I could see, it was like I was behind the curtains about to step onto all these different stages that in real life I've actually stepped onto. Then I was feeling it, the visceral feeling of times when the event was not going super smooth, the different types of audiences sometimes that get way too rowdy when they have had a lot to drink, just a whole different myriad of things. And I think one of the things that has helped me the most to be a professional is that even when, and especially when things are going poorly, I don't let it destroy me or the moment of what's happening. For the most part, I just am like, oh, this is what's happening. Now, how do I make sure to step in and make the event look as good as possible, or the producers of it, or the cause that we're serving, or whatever it is, and acknowledge and like accept what's happening. Because if you give that quick acknowledgement, and like you were saying, having a little bit of like wit and just confidence that it's okay, we're all just people stumbling through something, then it actually makes it a lot easier to move forward quicker to than if we're just like, if you let it start creeping in and then just kind of throw in the towel and get mad about something or start blaming someone. Oh, this is this sucky thing is happening backstage. You don't see that or whatever, which I've seen MCs or auctioneers or different people who like blame stuff. And that is just uncomfortable and tacky. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of the long answer to just saying, I think I'm at a season of life where I'm finally learning how to say no through my yes. You can get to know with yes and just in a more positive way, and recognizing that those feelings are truly guiding us to whatever the best fits are without stepping on someone else for what they're wanting to do. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just constantly staying in like a state of awareness and acceptance of what is going on so that I can be more nimble in my actions.
Well, let me tell you, that's a life learned skill that it takes sometimes a lifetime to learn, as someone that's super quick on her feet and with a fiery personality sometimes. not all the time. I can totally see how for myself that is still a skill that I'm working on. Now, it's funny though, because I can certainly separate myself from when I'm like every day with my family and my friends versus when I am in a professional situation and doing my craft and doing the skills that I'm paid for. And then there's a separation because it's not impacting me in a sense personally like that. So I can keep that as in, okay, this is what's happening over here. And I've had many situations I had to deal with, like someone totally going off the handle right here as we're about to start the event here. And even if it was addressed at me or someone next to me, that can be two different things. Like, hey, well, we're going to deal with this later. Like, we don't have to deal with it right now, you know?
Yes.
In personal life, however, have my husband say something and me be here and fireworks start because that's not the case anymore. So even me applying, you know, the skills. Okay, so if I can be cool and collected at work, how about I bring that a little bit into the personal life so that we can even up a little bit, that we don't have kind of like two different experiences here. So here's one thing that you mentioned as we were talking about improv. How about we do a demo? Yeah, I can be your patient. Let's see, how can we use improv as a mindset tool, as you mentioned, interactive, actionable resource for anyone that's facing, you know, maybe personal life challenge or professional life challenge. And let me tell you, COVID did not bring some professional life challenges. I don't know what else did, you know, not in our life at least. So let's do it. I don't know what's going to happen. This is not scripted, people. So I'm going to lose my wits.
Perfect. Yeah. And I love that you want to experience it. And we're going to do two really short little exercises that are going to basically be a back and forth that will demonstrate why those two little words make such a huge difference. Because again, it's not really about having to be funny, right? It's being present. And so when I'm on a stage with another improviser and I'm yes-anding with a scene partner, we're open to building together and accepting and hearing what each other is saying. And then eventually it's funny because we have focused on the relationship and supporting each other. So then, yeah, of course, in a comedy show, we do need to eventually be funny. We don't race to get there though. We first look at opportunities to support and build. And that's what I love so much about improv. So we're going to do two variations of an exercise. The first one is going to actually demonstrate the arch nemesis of yes and, which is yeah, but, and we all know we don't like to be butted on.
So I can bring my evil self to that.
Exactly. It's where dreams go to die. So I'm going to do a little timer here so that I can keep track of it, because these exercises, it's only 45 seconds long. And I'm going to start this round, and I'm going to start our little 45 second conversation with saying, I love blank. And I'm going to tell you something that I love so much. You're going to respond to me with yeah, but, and then respond to whatever I said.
Okay.
Then for the 45 seconds, we'll just go back and forth. And I'm going to then say to your thing, yeah, but, and then respond to whatever you said. Okay. And then we'll unpack it when we get there. But first, I just wanted to dive in so that we don't overthink it. So just be ready to make sure you actually
bring it
say,
on.
Yeah, but at the beginning of each of these sentences. Okay. I love my kids.
Yeah, but they're, man, a pain in the ass at bedtime.
Yeah, but they're just trying to negotiate their young little hearts and desires.
Yeah, but every time they come with a new idea, it's always at bedtime.
Yeah, but I feel like I have good ideas at bedtime. That's when my brain's alive.
Yeah, but I am way more productive in the morning after a good night's sleep.
Yeah, but maybe it's fun to stay up late and party.
Yeah, but after a certain age, man, it's like everything hurts.
Okay, pause. So that was our little 45 seconds. Now, before we unpack it, we're going to switch roles.
Okay.
45 seconds again. This time you're going to start with telling me something you love. Okay. And then I'm going to yes and you. And then for this round, every sentence response has to start with yes.
Okay.
And so it needs to legit be something that when you think of it, you go, oh my gosh, I love that.
Okay, so I'm not like
so
being
it could
sarcastic.
Be a person, a place, a thing, a dessert. No, we don't want sarcasm. I want you to tell me something you genuinely love, a person, a place, a thing, whatever. Okay.
I love this brand new car that I got. I mean, so smooth driving.
Yes. And I love my car too. It's a bright orange Jeep.
Yes. And mine has huge wheels and the suspension is amazing. When I take turns, I don't even feel like I'm driving.
Yes. And doesn't that feel so amazing that you could just take off and head anywhere you want.
Yes. And I don't even have to think about where I'm going because the GPS just will take me and it reads my mind.
Yes. And when the sun is shining and your windows are down and your hair is flying, that's such a good feeling.
Yes. And I can take all my friends with me.
Perfect.
Okay, awesome.
So what is the difference? Did you notice a difference between those two rounds?
Well, I feel like it's the two sides of the same coin where you can look at a situation from a positive perspective, and then you can look at the same situation, but with more of a negative attitude, sort of like connotation where everything seems gloomy.
Yeah, totally. I love to do this exercise because it's so simple and easy. And people are talking about something they genuinely love. It might be as simple as like a pizza topping or something that they own. I love my Yeti cup. It keeps my coffee so hot. Or it could be like, I love my wife or whatever. And then no matter what it is, if it's something you love, if you were thinking about, if I said that in everyday life and it was just met with, yeah, but then we're immediately having to be on the defense. We're feeling like whatever we said is less than, we put our guard up with that person, you start to see really quickly who are your yes anders in life, who like hear your wild idea. Like, I love my yes anders. They don't always have to be there doing everything with me. But I know if I have a new idea and I'm like, I want to see if there's something good behind this, I'll tell my yes ander friends, hey, I had this idea about this. And they'll be like, yes. Oh, that's a cool idea. Like, they wish me well. You know, we don't have to put our energy in and like use yes as a way to put like everything on our calendar we don't want and feel overburdened. It's just a way to like rally and show support. There's just such a clear distinction between when you are yeah, butted on, like, I know the people I would never share an idea or a personal crisis with or whatever, because they're going to just humglum it. They're going to worst case scenario it. They're going to constantly pick apart, oh, that idea. Well, how are you going to pay for that? Or where are you going to get all the yucky what ifs questions instead of saying, oh, interesting. You know, tell me more about that. I mean, obviously on the surface, it has really basic, easy things to take away. And when you really like go into things that matter, things where there is conflict, that's when it's even more important. Because if someone's already, you know, fired up about something or mad, or like, heaven forbid, we have differences of opinions in religion or politics or how, whether or not we should wear masks, you know, any of these things. If we're constantly confronting people with, yeah, but, blah, 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 yeah, but, instead of being like, yes, I hear you. Ooh, how did you form that opinion? Like, if it instead opens up curiosity and collaboration instead of shutting people down.
Do you feel that the social media of the last 10 years has emphasized more on the yes and attitude or more on the yeah, but?
What do you think?
That was a trick question.
I know. I wish. Because that's actually one of the examples I love to use when I'm speaking for groups is like, oh, when's the last time you've replied to someone's post about an opinion on Facebook and they changed their mind because of your aggressive yeah, butting that you've done? It is such a cesspool for yeah, but, and people are increasingly more comfortable because they're hiding behind their keyboards. Mm-hmm. I'm particularly suspicious of people who have pictures of their pets or cartoon characters instead of their face as a profile picture.
And then they go on crazy like keyboard warriors online.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, no, yeah, it is like a cesspool of yeah, but, and it makes me sad and yet that much more convicted to tell as many people as possible, because when people have an awakening to the simplicity of yes, and if they choose to, they can do something good with it. Because people still try to misuse yes, and they'll say yes, and but, and I'm like, nope, that's not it. That's a nice try. Nope.
That's right. I love the fact that we did the demo for anyone that was curious, especially since maybe there's people that, you know, do not necessarily are part of the comedy scene and have not heard of improv as a way to actually build company culture and support someone's through struggles. And with that in mind, I want to segue a little bit, totally out of, maybe not, maybe on topic, but maybe not, into collaboration over competition, because I can see how that plays out in so many ways, shape and form in your life, not just, you know, on stage, but also behind the scenes. So what does collaboration over competition look like for you, Megan, where you're standing from?
Oh, yeah. And that is a great segue, actually, because Yes and Land is a space of collaboration. It's a space of abundance. There's enough for everyone. And in fact, we can win more wins more frequently, bigger wins when we collaborate. We need each other. And yeah, but is the space of competition, of fear, of lack, of pulling other people down like the crabs in a bucket, you know, metaphor. So that's such a smooth segue, because for me, when I know how to look for my yes anders, I literally listen to the words people use, because the energy of what their vocabulary says can tell a lot about their willingness to collaborate and truly be like a champion for working together. And in our community, as an example, the community of comedy here in Little Boise, Idaho, we don't even have an official comedy club. So we rely on partnerships with breweries or other venues to host shows that are produced by comics. And there has to be some teamwork with having other funny comedians on stage at a show that we produce so that we know the deliverable is positive for the audience. Our goal should be the better experience people have with comedy, the more they might want to go see other shows. And that would mean more comedians win in a local space. And there is still a surprising amount of drama and people fighting over gigs that are not even hardly paying anything. They're just, you know, fun for stage time and practice and getting your footage and whatever. And they're missing the big picture of how much more powerful we are if we know each other's strengths, if we collaborate on certain themed shows or whatever. There's a couple of producers here that just do such a great job of finding that blend. And I just have never met a space where someone is a yeah butter that I left the gig feeling good about it. There was me trying to prove my worth, a low paying gig or whatever the case may be. I absolutely think it's incredibly important.
And I think a good sign of the quality of even like your inner circle relationship is, do they help you grow and prosper, or do they only compete to try to maybe outgrow or out prosper you? And are they people who would mention your name? Like, you know, the adage says, in a room full of opportunities, in a room full of money, of promise and blessings, they would be proud to say, hey, I know someone who would be perfect for this. I know someone who could handle this job so well. I know someone could really, really use this. And I personally base my relationships, you know, on many factors that indicates, you know, one's level of loyalty, love, support, far more than even blood relationships could do. And in the world of events, in my experience, the success of every and any event that I've been part of depends highly on working with the right people, the right professionals, not just qualified for the job, but the right attitude. Because I personally think that you can train for skills, but man, you cannot train, nor can you change, you know, stinky attitudes. Yeah. So as we're coming to an ending, I would love to ask you, what are your best tips for surrounding yourself with the right people, those that lift you up instead of tearing you down, the ones that support you and strive for better relationships in life and business?
Well, that's definitely been a work in progress. One of the things, actually, I thought of this earlier in the interview when we were talking about taking things personally. Well, I can't remember exactly now what we were talking about earlier, but I once read a book called The Four Agreements. I don't know if you've heard of it, by Don Miguel Ruiz. And I actually have a sticky note on my refrigerator that says, don't take things personally. Because what I find is that when I'm looking for the yes-anders and the yeah-butters, it's a slow process of just removing myself from the yeah-but spaces and not only being a yes-and space, but watching for the reciprocity. So just like you were saying in collaboration, like I might know someone who's really great at this other certain thing. And when I'm hired for events, I ask them now more often and more confidently, like, who do you guys use for your AV? Because if it's just someone, you know, someone that works in the office that's going to be clicking the buttons, those are the events that usually the microphone ends up dying because they didn't check the batteries, or, you know, there's these things that I just know that I'm like, oh, I would love to see more opportunities for that collaboration. And so it's been just a steady process of usually quietly removing myself from places where I don't feel like the collaborative stuff is happening. Because if you're in with yeah butters, they're not going to hear you if you try to say, oh, you know what, I need this or that or whatever. You can learn just from that space and time with people if the collaborative space is happening. So I surround myself with people who continue to show up and maintain. They've either earned that spot over time and the consistency, and they just maintain it so long as they are yes anders. And when people or circumstances change, which sometimes that does, then it doesn't have to be a big drama. I'm going to spend less time and energy here and just guard my precious little circle of things. Because yeah, I feel like, I don't know if that directly answers the question, but it's a lot of times it's just a quiet backing away from things that I know are not going to serve me. And if that doesn't serve me, I know I can't pour into it the way that I could somewhere else where it's more aligned with my morals and values and life missions.
And I think it goes hand in hand with the idea of using the yes and as the strategy, the methodology, like you mentioned, of being able to filter through some of those situations where now you know what to look for. I'm not the type of person that does not give people second chances, maybe third and fourth and fifth and sixth. And at one point I have to stop myself because I'm like, okay, that's gone a little too far. But when you see a pattern and you don't see that changing, maybe that's a good indication that you're not going to change that person just because you want them to or you will them to, you know?
Yeah. And it does sometimes take multiple times. And I don't ever feel bad about that. If I know I genuinely have put in effort with that yes and mindset of how can I keep yes anding them, keeping an eye on that reciprocity, it helps to just really firm it. And then I really don't feel bad about it when I'm like, I need to not put the effort in there anymore.
Yeah.
And then I haven't left it on bad terms usually either. It's like, I don't want to go around burning bridges. Yeah. I just kind of quietly move on because I've tested the waters with my yes and as much as I thought I needed to until I got my answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. It's been a lot of insightful tips, Tris, and the fact that we did the yes and demo, I loved it. And I want to ask you one more thing. If our audience wants to learn more about you, connect with you, where can they do that, Megan?
Oh, I'm super easy to Google up. So you're either looking me up, Megan McCaleb, but my handles are at Kooky Megan and at Improv Team Culture. And that's pretty much on all the platforms. I'm just super easy to find. And I would love to be found by you.
Only the good people, the yes and
yes anders. Yes.
Well, friends, this is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in, for listening. Stay tuned for what's coming up next. And thank you, yes, and Megan, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Events Demystified podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to review it, rate it, and share it with other event professionals that could benefit from it. Connect with us on social at Events Demystified Podcast. We would love to hear from you and what you're up to. If you'd like to learn more about Tree Fan Event Services and find out if we're a good fit in supporting your event, can we help your event be successful with a 20-minute free consultation? Link in the episode's notes. Thanks for tuning in.